Thanks for listening to the Friday Live Extra from NET Radio, a weekly podcast featuring arts and humanities in Nebraska, and an online-only feature we produce in conjunction with our weekly radio show, Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall, and later in today's podcast, I talk with two UNL professors who are guest scholars on a series of events celebrating Black History Month at Nebraska History Museum. We start this week, however, with the next concert on the St. Paul United Methodist Music and Arts Series, which takes place the first Friday of each month at St. Paul downtown. It's over the noon hour, and Dick Morris is not only curator of the music on the series, but he is also a guest soloist this particular month, and he's joined by a member of this month's featured ensemble, as well as a soloist on this concert, Lindsay Bartlett. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks,
wonderful
Jen.
To be here.
Yes. And by way of full disclosure, I am also a member of the featured ensemble.
I was going to say, we have two members of the featured ensemble here today,
which
not just one.
Which is Coro de Flauti, the flute choir here in Lincoln. So, Lindsay, let's start with you and tell our listeners a little bit about Coro de Flauti and what an audience member might expect if they've never heard a flute choir.
You got it. Coro de Flauti it's been such a joy to play with this group. I joined on, I guess it's been a little over a year now, I think, and I will admit that it is something I put off intentionally because a lot of flute players, we kind of say that we're allergic to flute choir. We say we're allergic to playing in flute choirs, but it's not the experience that you have in college when you're kind of forced to do it and you have to do it and you're putting together a flute festival or something along those lines. It's been so great, and we have such a great range of levels that play in the group. We have professionals that might be professional band directors or educators in other realms, or we have one of the bassoonists from Lincoln Symphony plays alto
Sandy.
Flute with
yes,
us.
Karen,
that's right.
Yes.
We have Karen Sandine that plays with us. So it's just such a nice wide range, and we all appreciate the opportunity to make music together. The biggest, most visible feature when you look at our group is that we don't just play the regular flute that you're expecting, right? Most people would know about the piccolo, which sounds an octave higher than the flute, but then we also have the alto flute, the bass flute, which is an octave lower, and then the contrabass flute, which is it two octaves or three octaves?
I think two octaves, because
then
there's a sub-contrabass
right.
flute that we don't have. But the contra is huge.
You can't miss it.
It is huge.
It is huge. You can't miss it. It really, you know, I think the joke from the movie Elf is you add a whole octave, right? When Elf, the characters that are talking about in the Elf choir, you bring us down a whole octave in a good way. That's what how I feel about the contra.
And it takes a lot of breath, too.
It does. Oh. And there's usually a good, dog and pony show that kind of goes along with our concerts to show the different instruments. And when I have students that come to the performances, they always love the opportunity to stand next to it.
It's probably taller than some students.
Yes, it is. If you stretch it out, it's kind of like the bassoon, right, where you stretch it out and it's suddenly eight times its length. The contrabass flute, it looks like the number four when you're looking at it. So it does have some extra length to it.
Yes.
But standing up on its own, it's probably 5 feet.
Well,
I would think
at least.
Because it rests on the floor.
Right, and then it has a pin at the bottom similar to what you would see on the upright bass, right, so you can adjust the height.
So now, Lindsay, a little background on you. You've actually been on Friday Live previously.
I have,
with Lincoln Symphony Orchestra,
and
now you're with Lincoln Children's Museum.
That's right. Been there for about a year now.
And they've been on the show as well for musical events.
Yeah,
and
music
now you're
at the museum. Yeah,
here
we have that coming up
choir.
In April.
With this particular concert, though, you get to solo with Coro de Flauti.
I do.
What's the piece that you're featuring?
It's called Voices of Nagasaki, and it is audience participation is expected, which sounds really scary, but it'll be really fun. The idea is that the voices are really in the audience. You're imagining the past and thinking through this event and participating. And my part, the solo part, kind of has this ethereal feeling to it, and the rest of the choir is supporting at a certain point, and then it almost switches. And instead of really supporting, we're kind of battling, right? And so then my line is really almost fighting to be heard while the rest of the choir is kind of doing their own thing. And then I get to join on with the alto flutes, which is really fun. I love that part when we get to play. We're playing right over top of each other there, Jen, and right next to each other, actually, as well. But it's just an interesting way for the solo line. I mean, if you're used to listening to concertos at all, you kind of expect some back and forth like that. But this is a very unique breakdown, I think. It's a lot of fun to play. And it's been an interesting challenge, I think, for the choir and for the soloist. There's some percussion featured as well. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the audience.
And having not heard the audience yet, I'm excited to hear the whole piece when it
That's
comes
right.
together.
Yes. With It'll be audience. Our first That's time as the choir incorporating the audience. We've had some, you know, we'll have a Vanna White, Mike Murphy, who plays with us regularly, a retired band director, and he will be passing around. He'll have some signage that can help the audience understand what they're expected to do. And we'll do a little, you know, demonstration before we get going. So hopefully that'll help us as the performers know, right? Because the European and American practice for attending a concert is that you kind of you sit there and you shut up, right?
Not
you don't
with
make
this
any
group.
Noise.
Not with, yeah. not with this group.
So it's going to be an interesting experience for the performers because we're not used to it, and also for the audience. I think the audience will actually feel relatively uncomfortable. So expect that. And if you think back to symphonies when they were first being written, that was expected, right? Mm-hmm. You would give a standing ovation in the middle of a movement and you would applaud and you would express your satisfaction or dissatisfaction for what you're hearing. So this is a little bit of a different version of that, but you know, we're not so acclimated to it anymore.
Now,
but it's
Dick,
a very fun piece. Yeah.
You get to solo as well on a piece for piano and flute choir. What is that piece?
It's called Dancing by Moonlight.
Oh, it sounds lovely.
And it is. It is absolutely lovely. It just, the beauty and spirituality of dancing in the moonlight. And I feel like it sometimes when I, you know. And two other things I really need to say. Mm-hmm. First, this is becoming an annual event for us in our series, is to have the Coro di Frati. And it's the most popular event usually of each year. Also, I had the privilege of attending their last rehearsal last Saturday. And oh my, I am telling everyone, you must come. This is a fascinating program and extremely well played. I mean, just delightful. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and as always with this series, there's also artwork in Payne Parlor there at the
That's
church.
That's correct.
But who's the featured artist for February?
Sarah Wanick. Now, that name may sound familiar.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Of Crete, and you're right. But she's young and just a wonderful artist, very bright coloring and contrast, you know, it's just really brightens up the room tremendously, you know, and that'll be in place for the entire month.
So lunch, artwork, and music with Coro di Frati.
And bells.
And then the bells that are played
right
ahead
at
of the concert.
Yeah.
All kinds of things going on, and I've been talking here with Dick Morris and Lindsay Bartlett about that. It's the next concert on the St. Paul United Methodist Music and Art Series, Coro di Frati, playing at 12:10 p.m., preceded by the McKinley Bells. And as Dick mentioned, there's lunch before and after the concert, and we were talking about that artwork on display in Payne Parlor, which is just north of the sanctuary there. And again, that concert is Friday, February 1st. Dick and Lindsay are also featured soloists on that concert. So glad to talk about this concert with both of you.
Well, good being
Thanks,
here.
Jen.
Thank you.
Great chatting with you and playing with you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All three of us.
Next here on the Friday Live Extra, I'm joined by Shelby Johnson, who works with the Nebraska History Museum, as well as Professors Joaquitl Dreyer and Jeanette Jones from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. They are all here to talk about events at the museum for Black History Month, starting with a Family Fun Day on February 2nd from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. There's also a film screening on February 7th, and then there's a brown bag lecture on February 21st, and we'll talk about all of that. Welcome to our podcast this week.
Thank you.
It's great
to be here.
Great to have you. So, Shelby, let's start with the first event of the month, February 2nd. What's in store for the Family Fun Day at Nebraska History Museum?
So this is our first free Family Fun Day of the year, and it is all about Black History Month, and we really wanted to focus on Nebraska's Black history and not the whole nation. So all of our activities are focused on stories that are really specific to Nebraska. We're going to be doing a sod house making activity, but there's a twist. We're making it with candy bars.
Oh, nice.
Edible sod houses, right?
Wow.
And while doing some research, we uncovered that the Union Pacific Railroad had a baseball club and they had an African-American team team. They were called the Union Pacific Gold Coast Baseball Club. So we are going to actually design our own logos for that baseball team.
Wonderful.
We're also going to be making some keepsake boxes. You may be familiar with the story of Ruth Cox. She was actually a friend of Frederick Douglass, and he gave her this beautiful sewing box. She was local to Lincoln here, and she actually kept a lot of family mementos, keepsakes, and that's helped us learn the history of one African-American family here in Nebraska. And we want kids to make their own keepsake box so they can preserve their family's history. We're also going to have a scavenger hunt throughout the exhibits, focusing on those objects that really relate to the African-American history here in Nebraska. And then to wrap it all up with those activities, we're going to have kids design their own historical markers. That is a History Nebraska program. And we want kids, after they learn all of these new things, we want them to make their own historic marker with information they feel is important in Black history or in Nebraska's Black history specifically. And we're going to put those up in a collage, and I hope to have that hanging up somewhere in the museum in the near future. And one last thing I forgot to mention.
Sure.
We also have some dance students from UNL. They're going to be doing a presentation on African-American dance and culture. So they're going to be showing some videos. They're going to be teaching some dance moves and really letting the kids get up and join.
And all interactive ways for those kids to get involved with history, which I think really makes it more real instead of just sitting and watching a film or listening to someone talk about it. You're hands-on with all of those experiences there.
Yes.
Listeners may know Joaquitl Dreyer's voice, of course, from our Friday Live film reviews. She's also Associate Professor of English and Ethnic Studies at UNL. And Joaquitl, you're going to be presenting a screening at the Nebraska History Museum. The film is Greased Lightning, and that screening is happening on February 7th. This is the 1977 film?
Yes, it is.
Starring Richard Pryor?
Starring Richard Pryor, yes.
I have to admit, I haven't seen it. So what should we know about? It's loosely based on a true story?
Yes, it is. It's loosely based on the true story of Wendell Oliver Scott, who was the first Black stock car racing champion in America. He was born in Danville, Virginia in 1921 and died in 1990 at the age of 69. He was inducted into the NASCAR Hall of Fame on January 30th, 2015.
What to you is most significant about showing this film at the Nebraska History Museum during Black History Month?
Well, overall, Wendell Oliver Scott's story is about generally Black entrepreneurship and specifically Black self-determination during the Jim Crow era. Michael Schultz, who's the director, dramatizes the blatant racial prejudice Scott had to endure to such an extent that white race car drivers would undermine him on the racetrack to such where he almost lost his life. But Scott never gave up. He never gave up. That was his dream to race, and he followed through on it.
And you'll be there at that screening to provide some context, talk with viewers about the film. So then another event later in the month, Jeanette Jones, she's also been on Friday Live. Many listeners may be familiar with the Humanities on the Edge series. She's also Associate Professor of History and Ethnic Studies at UNL. And her presentation will be at a Brown Bag Lecture exploring the history of Black Americans in Nebraska. So Jeanette, geographically, how many parts of the state might you be looking at for your lecture?
For the most part, I am going to focus on probably four areas. Of course, because we're in Lincoln, I'm going to start with Lincoln. I'm also going to talk about Omaha and briefly about two settlements of Black homesteaders out, one in Cherry County and one, I believe, is out where the DeWitty Colony was. What I'm trying to do with this lecture is really talk about what attracts African Americans to the state of Nebraska. And so it's titled Hope for Nebraska, the promises and perils of Black mobility in the Great Plains. And so I also want to put Nebraska in the context of other Great Plains migration, including Kansas and Oklahoma, just so people can understand that, you know, African Americans had several choices in terms of coming to the Plains, but those who came to Nebraska had a particular view mm-hmm. of what this state could offer as compared to, for instance, Kansas or Oklahoma, or even if you go further north to the Dakotas. And so I'm definitely interested in kind of talking about the promises, but also to echo something that Dr. Dreher said, like the perils, like understanding that this is a very violent time. As we know, the 1919 race riot in Omaha is one of the largest race riots that year, part of the Red Summer in the United States. And so people came here with their eyes kind of wide open, thinking that it would be better than the South, but they also understood the nature of racism and white supremacy. And so I'm trying to think of how, talk about the ways they navigated that, and in some cases, in the case of the race riot in 1919, couldn't escape it, Will Brown, who loses his life.
As I travel the state quite a bit, mm-hmm. I was thinking about how there are all these historical markers around the state kind of telling us what used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, many times you can't see what was once in a place. There's a historical marker on a highway, right. And it's really, I'm wondering, what are the ways you've gone about exploring Nebraska's history, especially pertaining to the history of Black Americans in Nebraska?
I mean, for the most part, I have relied heavily on the Nebraska State Historical Society. They have a wealth of artifacts as well as printed archival materials, including the first ever Black newspapers produced in the state. And so a lot of this is really the kind of substance for me even thinking about where African Americans settled. But then I also have looked at master's theses. Mm-hmm. For instance, there's a master's thesis on the NAACP in Nebraska, both the mm-hmm. Omaha and the Lincoln chapter. Of course, PhD theses as well, or dissertations. So in other printed primary sources, just recently, Rick Edwards, Jake Freifield, and Rebecca Wingo published a book on Black homesteaders, and they did a lot of work on Black homesteaders in Nebraska, so I'm relying on that as well. So it's really a mixture of kind of primary source archival research mm-hmm. and then things that have already been published by other scholars, both lay and academic scholars, yeah.
Lots to be learned and mm-hmm. lots going on mm-hmm. at the Nebraska
yes.
History
Absolutely.
Museum.
Yes.
Sounds great. Jeanette Jones and Waquetal Dreher are both presenting at events taking place in February at the Nebraska History Museum. Shelby Johnson is with the Nebraska History Museum, and we've all been talking about events celebrating Black History Month that starts Saturday, February 2nd, with a family fun day from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. A film screening and lecture are at 5:30, February 7th, and then the Brown Bag Lecture, Exploring the History of Black Americans in Nebraska, is February 21st, and that's at noon. And you can link to more information, of course, on our website, netnebraska.org/radio, right there on the Friday Live page. Much appreciation to all three of you for being part of this week's Friday Live Extra podcast.
Thank you, Genevieve.
So much
Thank
for
you.
Having
Thanks
us.
For having us.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
The Friday Live Extra is a weekly podcast from NET Radio. Production help from Dave Hughes. Our theme music is by Alexios Anest. You can learn more about people and groups involved in arts and humanities in Nebraska by listening to Friday Live, broadcast statewide each week on NET Radio, streaming audio and video online at netnebraska.org, and also available as a podcast. I'm Genevieve Randall.